Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely working our way through the story of the Cosmere, with a focus on the Stormlight Archive. And if you can hear the smile in my voice, it's because today we are starting my favorite book in the series, Oathbringer.
Is it your favorite book in the series or your favorite book in the Cosmere?
It's not my favorite book in the Cosmere, because my favorite book in the Cosmere is the fifth Mistborn book, but this is probably my second favorite book in the Cosmere. Mm-hmm. Oathbringer, book three of the Stormlight Archive. I've shown you the cover before. Okay, so remember when I told you that I had all the pictures pulled? That's the cover for this book. Cover and back cover. As you can see, Yasna holding a shard blade.
That is doing a weird wavy, wobbly thing.
Yeah. There's some spears there in the foreground, and there's something there in the background that does not look nice.
It's the Ice Titan, but black.
Yeah, it's the Ice Titan. This is actually the Kingdom Hearts 3 crossover book, even though it came out as part of my fun facts on November 14th, 2017. So this released a little over 3.5 years after book two. It is 1,220 pages long.
Oh my god.
Which is about 132 pages longer than book two.
I am so glad I'm not reading these.
It is about 454,000 words, which is 56,000 longer than book two.
Jesus Christ.
There are 138 chapters. There were 105 in book two. There's 29 different POV characters, up from 21 in the last book. And in terms of like individual POV counts, so not every chapter, but every time it switches whose POV it's in, it changes POVs 273 times. And in the last book, they only did that 178 times. So it changes POVs about 100 times more.
Jeez, okay.
Yes.
Cool. Is that because there's more pages, or that just changes POV like constantly?
There's a lot more times where in somebody's chapter it'll jump to somebody else's POV in this book. Especially at the end, it jumps around in POVs a ton.
As part of the
Sanderlanch. Yes. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if like 50 of those POV jumps are all from the ending. On the back cover, which we found out in Edge Dancer, well, I told you after Edge Dancer, we didn't find out in Edge Dancer, but the back cover text is all being written by those weird crab creatures, or not crab creatures, these are bug creatures. These the Sleepless. And the back cover reads, "A new storm has come. Ash and red lightning sweep the land, awakening our ancient enemies. The unmade shadows of the enemy's soul stir, while the eyes of men open." So if you remember from the last book, the unmade are like evil Spren. "This war is not and never was what they thought it to be. We may soon hold surges again, for radiance has returned to some and shine towards others. The captain, broken by loss, seeks reconciliation." You have any guesses to who that is?
Yep.
Who do you think it is?
The captain, broken by loss?
Yeah, seeks reconciliation.
He's flying off home to go yell at the person who sent him to the war.
"The spy, broken by cruelty, seeks completion." You have a guess as to who that is?
My brain is not working.
Okay. "The stonewalker, broken by oaths, seeks truth." You have a guess as to who that is?
Zeth.
Yeah. "The traitor, broken by ambition, seeks freedom." Do you have any guesses to who that is?
Dalinar.
"And finally, the king, broken by war, he seeks the past, that which was abandoned, that which he must not know. For those secrets will crush him as they did the knights who came before."
Maybe that one's Dalinar. Wait, but he's not a king.
Mm-hmm.
Yet. I don't know. I don't want to
How
think
much of
about
a
it.
King is Elikar?
Not much, but I mean, Dalinar's not a king by name, so.
Yeah.
My brain's not working. I don't want to try and figure it out. I'll get the answer by the end of the book. So
you will. So this book has some very nice front and end pages that I'm gonna share with you. I want to make sure. It doesn't really matter what order I post them in. It doesn't matter. So there's four pictures. This one is a drawing or a portrait or whatever of the Herald Ishar.
Oh, the one that they keep getting answers from that taught them how to gaslight people.
Yeah, that's Ishar.
Okay.
This cool. one is...
Why does he look old?
Oh, he looks like an old dude.
But why? I thought they were ageless.
I think it, like, you can kind of choose how you want to look, I think.
Why does he want to look old?
Because you know? He's like a wise old man. You know? I think
okay, but he could be a wise young man.
I think it's part of the aesthetic. You know what I'm saying? He's trying to be like a Gandalf figure.
Oh, so he thinks people will treat him more as a wise man if he is old, but people won't believe that he's actually that wise if he appears young.
Yeah, I don't know if that's like exactly his reasoning, but that is what I would think, and also think maybe that's how he views himself as well. This next picture is of Yezrian.
Wait, that's the one that's for the
Windrunners.
Yeah.
Yes, the King of Heralds.
Yeah.
This is Shalash.
The one who's breaking everything?
Yes.
I like that art, it's pretty.
I agree, I really like it a lot.
It's very pretty.
And this is Videl.
Is that the one we saw in the library?
Videl Coppermine.
Which is the one we saw in the library?
Videl, I don't think it's the one we saw in the library. I don't
know.
Okay,
then who's this one?
I don't think we've seen Videl.
Why are you showing me art of Videl if we haven't even met them yet?
This is what's in the book. This is also not so much like, hey, you're gonna meet these characters in this book. It's he wanted to start giving like these are in-universe depictions of the Heralds. You know what I'm saying?
In-universe depictions of the Heralds.
Yeah.
So presumably that art piece was torn up of the other one.
Yeah, eventually, presumably that was like something. But
damn
this is kind
it,
of
it's
what
so
you
pretty.
Could, what you could expect
how
to see.
How dare you destroy art, regardless of who it's depicting.
Shalash, by the way, Herald of the Lightweavers.
Unless it's a statue of like someone really evil who should not be remembered, then you can destroy that. That's fine.
Yeah. Shalash is the Herald of the Lightweavers, which is obviously Shallan's order. Ishar is the Herald of the Bondsmiths, which is Dalinar's order. And Videl is the Herald of the Dustbringers, which we have not met any Dustbringers yet.
Yeah, but it was in that one thing you sent
meme.
Me yesterday.
It was the meme I sent.
Yesterday that I could not comprehend.
We know so little about the Dustbringers except for the fact that apparently they're like horrifically powerful, and that's it. Inside the book, we have the obligatory map of Roshar, which is now in color.
You've shown me this one.
I've shown you this one. I showed you this one at the beginning of Edge Dancer when you were asking about locations, but this one is, you can see...
This is the first time we see the colorful map?
Yeah, it's always been in black and white before.
What the fuck? Okay.
Yep. And you can see Yirithiru is kind of in the center of the continent.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you could call that the center technically, but it's...
Yeah, it's a little to the left of center.
Central.
Really. Yeah. We start with the prologue, which is titled To Weep, and it has Eshonai's symbol. Eshonai had always told her sister that she was certain something wonderful lay over the next hill. Then one day, she'd crested a hill and found humans. Now, over a year later, Eshonai arrives at the docks of Kolinar and marvels at its beauty and size. Her and the other listeners are confused by the Parshman slaves. They keep trying to help, Gitgeth said to Curiosity. He shook his head. The little rhythmless ones want to be near us. They sense that something is wrong with their minds, I tell you. Eshonai tried to send the Parshman away, but they would not listen. The idea of slavery is an odd concept to her and the rest of the listeners. The others let Eshonai wander off to explore. They're used to her leaving in the middle of a job. She begins exploring the palace. Eventually, she stumbles upon the king's study. Eshonai froze. The door cracked open, King Gavilar himself stood pointing at something on a table surrounded by five others. Eshonai attuned anxiety and pulled a whip back, but not before being noticed as she pulled the door closed. A moment later, a tall man in uniform stepped out. "The king would like to see you, Parshendi." She feigned confusion. "Sir, words?" "Don't be coy," the soldier said. "You are one of the interpreters. Come in, you aren't in trouble." Anxiety shaking her, she let him lead her into the den. "Thank you, Meridas," Gavilar said. "Leave us for a moment, all of you." So, Meridas is Amaram's first name. So that soldier is Amaram.
Oh, shit.
They filed out, leaving Eshonai at the door. "Eshonai," the king said, "I have something to show you." He knew her name? She stepped farther into the room. More than any human, this man baffled her. Why did he smile at her like that? What was he hiding? "Sit, Eshonai," the king said. "Oh, don't be frightened, little scout. I've been wanting to speak to you. Your mastery of our language is unique." She settled on a chair while Gavilar reached down and removed something from a small satchel. It glowed with red stormlight, a construction of gemstones and metal. He goes on explaining Fabrials, how they work by trapping Spren in gemstones. "The Chasm Fiends aren't your gods, are they?" he said. "What?" she asked. "Why ask that?" "Oh, it's merely something I've been thinking about. My officers feel so superior, as they think they have you figured out. They think you're savages, but they are so wrong. You're not savages. You're an enclave of memories, a window into the past." He leaned forward. "I need you to deliver a message to your leaders. The five? You're close to them, and I'm being watched. I need their help to achieve something." She hummed to anxiety. Now, he said. "I'm going to help you, Eshonai. Did you know I've discovered how to bring your gods back?" "No." She hummed to the rhythm of terrors. "No." "My ancestors," he said, "first learned how to hold a spren inside a gemstone, and with a very special gemstone, you can hold even a god." "Your Majesty," she said, daring to take his hand in hers. "Please, we no longer worship those gods. We left them, abandoned them." "Ah, but this is for your good and for ours," he stood up. "We live without honor, for your gods once brought ours. Without them, we have no power. This world is trapped, Eshonai, stuck in a dull, lifeless state of transition." He looked toward the ceiling. "Unite them. I need a threat. Only danger will unite them." "What?" she said to anxiety. "What are you saying?" "Our enslaved Parshmen were once like you. Then we somehow robbed them of their ability to undergo the transformation. We did it by capturing a spren, an ancient, crucial spren." He looked at her, green eyes alight. "I've seen how that can be reversed. A new storm that will bring the heralds out of hiding. A new war." "Insanity," she rose to her feet. "Our gods tried to destroy you. The old words must be spoken again." "You can't," she trailed off. "I thought you'd be pleased to hear that we are allies in seeking the return of your gods," Gavilar said. "You claim to fear them, but why fear that which made you live? My people need to be united, and I need an empire that won't simply turn to infighting once I am gone." "So you seek for war?" "I seek for an end to something that we never finished. My people were radiant once, and your people, the Parshmen, were vibrant. Who is served by this drab world where my men fight each other in endless squabbles without light to guide them, and your people are as good as corpses?" Gavilar removed something from his pocket. A sphere? It was dark, yet somehow still glowed, as if it had an aura of blackness, a phantom light that was not light. Faintly violet, it seemed to suck in the light around it. He set it on the table before her. "Take that to the five and explain what I told you. Tell them to remember what your people once were. Wake up, Eshonai." He patted her on the shoulder, then left the room. She stared at that terrible light and knew it for what it was. The forms of power had been associated with a dark light, a light from the King of Gods. She plucked the sphere off the table and went running. Eshonai is at the evening celebration, beating a drum, trying to lose herself in the rhythm. "He intends to bring back our gods," she told the five. "He can do it. He knows so much. We have to do something." Clade's slave was an assassin. Clade claimed that a voice had led him to the man. Fenley had apparently been with Clade. After a frantic debate, the five had agreed that this was a sign of what they were to do. Long ago, the listeners had summoned the courage to adopt Dullform in order to escape their gods. They'd sought freedom at any cost. Today, the cost of maintaining that freedom would be high. She wept softly and didn't look as the strange assassin wearing flowing white clothing left the room. She'd voted with the others for this course of action. She resisted as the others pulled her away. She wept to leave the music behind, wept for her people who might be destroyed for tonight's action. Wept for the world, which might never know what the listeners had done for it. Wept for the king, whom she'd consigned to death. The drums cut off around her, and dying music echoed through the halls. And that is the end of the prologue.
Gavilar, you motherfucker.
Part 1, United. The viewpoints for this part are Dalinar, Shallan, Kaladin, and Adolin. We have an image. And the image I just posted is a map of... It's kind of a map, but like in a very weird looking way. In a very weird depiction of a map. But it shows the locations of the different Oath Gates. So Yirithiru is at the center. And you can see there's a Oath Gate in the Reshi Isles. There's an Oath Gate in Yaakoved in Vaedanar. There's an Oath Gate in Alethkar in the capital city of Kolinar. There's an Oath Gate on the Shattered Plains at Narok. There's an Oath Gate in Thalina at Thalin City. There's an Oath Gate in Azir in Azamir, the capital city. There's an Oath Gate in Amia. There's an Oath Gate in Shunavar. There's an Oath Gate in Eri, and it's in Ralalorum. And there's an Oath Gate in Babatharnam. Chapter 1, Broken and Divided. It has Dalinar's symbol. The epigraph reads, I'm certain some will feel threatened by this record. Some few may feel liberated. Most will simply feel that it should not exist. From Oathbringer, Preface. The chapter starts, Dalinar Kalin appeared in the vision standing beside the memory of a dead god. It had been 6 days since his forces had arrived at Yirithiru. Dalinar felt as if he knew nothing, so he spent his time in the vision. He was currently in the first he had experienced, where he stood over a destroyed Kolinar. Dalinar ignored the Almighty as he began to speak. Since bonding with the Stormfather, he had been able to replay the visions at will. Dalinar explores the vision, but the Stormfather tells him that the only part that matters is what the Almighty wants him to hear. The Almighty, however, created the vision, so Dalinar looks for clues in the backdrop. He saw the damage done to Kolinar and thought of the massive stone creatures he had seen in the visions, monsters that ripped themselves free from rock. A war was coming. In Awakening the Desolation, the enemy had rekindled a millennia-old conflict of ancient creatures. Heralds were supposed to appear and lead the charge against the Voidbringers. The Knights Radiant should have been in place, prepared and trained, ready to face the enemy. They were supposed to be able to trust in the guidance of the Almighty. Instead, Dalinar had only a handful of new Radiants, and there was no sign of help from the Heralds. And beyond that, the Almighty, God himself, was dead. Somehow, Dalinar was supposed to save the world anyway. The vision begins to end, and Dalinar insists on staying to feel the destruction. He faced it head-on, and in the blast of power that ripped apart the ground, he saw something. A golden light, brilliant yet terrible. Standing before it, a dark figure in black shard plate. The figure had 9 shadows, each spreading out in a different direction, and its eyes glowed a brilliant red. Dalinar stared deep into those eyes and felt a chill wash through him. Though the destruction raged around him, vaporizing rocks, those eyes frightened him more. He saw something terribly familiar in them. This was a danger far beyond even the storms. This was the enemy's champion, and he was coming. Unite them, quickly. Dalinar gasped as the vision shattered. He found himself sitting beside Navani in the tower city of Yirithiru. What was that light I saw? He whispered. I saw no light, the Stormfather said. It was brilliant and golden, but terrible. It bathed everything in its heat. Odium, the Stormfather rumbled. The enemy. 9 shadows, Dalinar whispered. 9 shadows? The Unmade, his minions, ancient Spren. Dalinar blinked, looking to Navani, the woman he loved, her face painfully concerned as she held his arm. Dalinar tells Navani that he knows what they have to do. They must force the monarchs to listen and unite the people of Roshar against their enemy. Navani expresses concern over their own situation, isolated in the mountains, and Dalinar says that they have no choice but to fight. He tells her that together they'll force the rest of the world to listen to reason. It would have to start with them, convincing the other monarchs to allow Radiance to be sent so that they could unlock the Oath Gates in the different capitals. A knock came at the door to his room, and Navani called for the person to enter. One of Dalinar's scouts poked her head through the door. Dalinar turned, frowning, noting the woman's nervous posture and quick breathing. What? He demanded. Sir, the woman said, saluting, face pale. There's been an incident. A corpse discovered in the corridors. Dalinar felt something building. Who? High Prince Toriel Sadeas, sir, the woman said. He's been murdered. And that is the end of chapter one.
They just found him.
They just found him.
Nice.
Chapter two is titled One Problem Solved, and it has Adolin's symbol.
That is true. We do have a problem solved.
It has Adolin's symbol, and the epigraph reads, I needed to write it anyway, from Oathbringer Preface. It has Adolin's POV to start. Adolin supervises the influx of people and supplies into Yirithiru. They were deep within the tower, the cavern as large as a small town. Taverns were being set up along the central corridor with lifts. This cavern had become a dumping ground for both supplies and people. Four entire war camps had come to Yirithiru, and Navani was struggling to find the right spot for them all. Adolin was glad for the assignment, to distract him. If he sat alone too long, he would start thinking about what had happened the day before. Had he really done that? Had he really murdered Toril Sadeas? It was almost a relief when at long last a runner came for him, whispering that something had been discovered in the corridors of the third floor. Adolin was certain he knew what it was. And we cut to Dalinar's POV. Dalinar arrives at the scene of the murder right as a fight between Bridge 4 and Sadeas' troop is about to break out. Sadeas' men are accusing Bridge 4 of having killed the High Prince, and Teft says that they found the High Prince already dead. Dalinar breaks up the fighting and sends most of the soldiers away. Dalinar inspects the body, worried about the infighting that will come from the death of Sadeas. Sabariel and his mistress Pelona are there, along with Adolin, Renarin, Shallan, Navani, Teft, and Sigzel. All of them agree that Sadeas being gone is a problem solved, except for Dalinar. Sabariel argues that they're better off without him. Dalinar has trouble reconciling the Sadeas that had been his friend prior to Gavilar's murder with the man who had caused so much suffering. He leads the group to a balcony on the outer rim of the tower. Above him rose the enormous tower city of Yirithiru, created from a sequence of 10 ring-like tiers, each containing 18 levels. The tower city was adorned with aqueducts, windows, and balconies. The bottom floor also had wide sections jutting out at the perimeter, large stone surfaces. They had stone railings at their edges. Somehow, these were fields. Like the large spaces for gardens atop each tier of the tower, this area had been farmed, despite the cold. Dalinar strode up to the edge of the balcony and rested his hands on the wall. The others gathered behind him. Along the way, they'd picked up High Prince Aladar. He was accompanied by Mei, his daughter. Navani whispered to them the details of Sadeas' death. Dalinar swept his hand outward in the chill air, pointing away from the balcony. What do you see? The bridgemen gathered to look off the balcony. Their number included the Herdazian, who now had two arms after regrowing the one with Stormlight. Kaladin's men had begun manifesting powers as Windrunners, though apparently they were merely squires. Navani said it was a type of apprentice Radiant that had once been common, men and women whose abilities were tied to their master, a full Radiant. The men of Bridge 4 had not bonded their own spren and had lost their abilities when Kaladin had flown to Alethkar to warn his family of the Everstorm.
Wait, that's a thing?
Yes, they're explaining what? It now for the first time.
What?
That people, there are things called squires that can get power from full Radiance before they become Radiance themselves.
Okay, so that's how, mm-hmm. Wait, no, because Lopin was away with his family.
He was at least close enough. He was still on the Shattered Plains.
Oh, okay.
Whereas, like, now that Kaladin is, like, far, far away, he's in, like, another country, it's mm-hmm. too far.
Okay.
We,
so Dalinar, just, like, yes? Swearing, well, not necessarily swearing loyalty, but being loyal and honoring a Radiant can manifest powers in other people? That's...
Yeah, not as strong,
that's
but...
interesting. Yeah, but they can still heal yeah. themselves with Stormlight.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. We, Dalinar said, are above the storms. It's going to be easy to forget the tempest the rest of the world is facing. The Everstorm will return, bringing the Voidbringers. We have to assume that this city, our armies, will soon be the only bastion of order left in the world. It is our calling, our duty to take the lead. Aladar and Pelona point out how bad their losses were at Narok. Royan's son is not prepared to take over the princedom, and both Vamah and Thanadol's forces had stayed behind in the war camps, and they were, like, the biggest forces left. Dalinar asks an Ardent to talk about what she knows of the Desolations. Kalami cleared her throat. They were destruction made manifest, Bright Lord. Each one was so profoundly devastating that humankind was left broken. Populations ruined, society crippled, scholars dead. Humankind was forced to spend generations rebuilding after each one. Songs tell of how the losses compounded upon one another, causing us to slide farther each time, until the heralds left a people with swords and fabrials, and returned to find them wielding sticks and stone axes. And the Voidbringers, Dalinar asked? They came to annihilate. Their goal was to wipe humankind from Roshar. They were specters, formless. Some say they are spirits of the dead, others spren from damnation. We will have to find a way to stop this from happening again, Dalinar said, turning back to the group. We are the ones this world must be able to look to. We must provide stability, a rallying point. This is why I cannot rejoice to find Sadeas dead. He was a thorn in my side, but he was a capable general and a brilliant mind. We needed him. Before this is through, we'll need everyone who can fight. Aladar asks what he can do, and Dalinar names him High Prince of Information. He tells Aladar to establish order in Urithiru, and to establish zones for each High Prince and build a policing force. Dalinar names Sabariel High Prince of Commerce, and directs him to establish marketplaces in Urithiru, to turn the tower into a functioning city. Adolin is tasked with making sure that the armies are training, and ensuring that as long as they stay in Urithiru, they are under Dalinar's command as High Prince of War. Bridge 4 is tasked with continuing to explore Urithiru and to let Dalinar know as soon as Kaladin returns. He took a deep breath. A voice echoed in the back of his mind, as if distant. Unite them. Be ready for when the enemy's champion arrives. Our ultimate goal is the preservation of all Roshar. We've seen the cost of division in our ranks. Because of it, we failed to stop the Everstorm. But that was just the trial run. The sparring before the real fight. To face the Desolation, I will find a way to do what my ancestor the Sunmaker failed to do through conquest. I will unify Roshar. No man had ever united the entire continent. This was his task, he was increasingly certain. The enemy would unleash his worst terrors, the Unmade and the Voidbringers, that phantom champion in the dark armor. Dalinar would resist them with a unified Roshar. Renarin asks what he and Shallan are supposed to do, and Dalinar tells them to continue practicing with their powers, so that when more Radiants appear, they can lead them. Renarin is reluctant, but Dalinar tells him that they're all curious to see what he can do. And that is the end of Chapter 2. We're going to do one more chapter tonight. Chapter 3, Momentum. And this has, if I just... Alright, this is going to be really small. But this is Dalinar's flashback symbol. It's like his normal symbol, but it's not as small as I thought it was going to be, but the colors are inverted. So instead of being white on the inside, it's black on the inside.
Okay.
This chapter is titled Momentum, and it's 34 years ago.
Damn.
Dalinar charged across a burning field with his elite squad following him. They were not a guard, just the men he considered competent enough not to embarrass him. They burst from the field and slammed into a line of spearmen that were hastily forming ranks on the southern edge of a town. He hit the spearmen like a boulder, his sword tossing blood into the air. The spearmen thrust their spears frantically. Dalinar laughed, slamming aside a pair of spears with his shield, then disemboweling one man with a blade deep in the gut. The man dropped his spear in agony, and his neighbors backed away at the horrific sight. Dalinar came in with a roar, killing them with a sword that bore their friend's blood. He pushed forward, shearing through the ranks until he reached the back. A young spearman wept on the ground nearby, screaming for his mother. Dalinar shook his head and rammed his sword down into the boy's back as he passed. Dalinar searched for the thrill as his elites began to crush the spearman lines. A large group of enemy soldiers charge them, and Dalinar leads his elites to meet them. They're led by a Bright Lord on horseback, who Dalinar focuses on. He attacks the first guard and overpowers him with pure force. This man didn't get a chance to cry for his mother. The body dropped before him. Dalinar let his elites handle the others. The way was open to the Bright Lord. The foe raised his sword to his helm, tore Dalinar, in a sign of challenge accepted. Idiot. Dalinar pointed at the man, and one of his elites shot the horse in the chest with a bow. Then Dalinar pounced on the man as he fell, trying to overwhelm him. During the fight, the straps of his shield break, and the Bright Lord gains the advantage. Dalinar barely manages to disarm the Bright Lord, who just punches him in the face and breaks Dalinar's nose. Dalinar fell to his knees and dropped his sword. He threw himself at the enemy, screaming as the thrill finally arrived. He knocked the Bright Lord to the ground and caught a pole axe that one of his soldiers tossed to him. The guards tried to attack Dalinar. He buries the axe head in one side, smashes the Bright Lord on the head with it, then parries a blow from the remaining guard. He spit blood in the guard's eyes, then kicked him in the stomach. The Bright Lord was trying to flee, and Dalinar hooked the spike into his side and dropped him to the ground again. As the Bright Lord rolled over, Dalinar brought the axe down and drove the spike through the man's chest. Finally, the honor guard broke and started to flee. Dalinar's men got out their bows and shot the other men in the back as they ran. Nearby, the fallen Bright Lord groaned softly. "Why?" the man said. "Why us?" "Don't know," Dalinar said. You don't know?" the dying man said. "My brother chooses," Dalinar said. "I just go where he points me." One of Dalinar's men finishes off the dying Bright Lord, and another hands him a new sword as the one that he had been using was now bent and broken. "You all right, Bright Lord?" Dim asked. "Never been better," Dalinar said. His men formed up around him, and Dalinar led the way farther down the street. Before too long, he could make out the bulk of the enemy still fighting ahead, harried by his own army. Dalinar tells Thaka, the captain of his elites, to raid the nearby buildings, hoping that the fighting soldiers would falter at the sight of their families being rounded up. He tells them that the men can loot later and that right now they need hostages. Something slammed into Dalinar's shoulder. It threw him down and pain flared up from his side. He blinked as he found himself lying on the ground. A storming arrow sprouted from his right shoulder. It had gone straight through the chainmail, just to the side of where his cuirass met his arm. Thaka shielded Dalinar with his body, and another soldier pointed out a ridge over 300 yards away where the shot came from. Dalinar is in disbelief and forces himself to his feet, just as another arrow narrowly misses him. Dalinar calls for the horses, and a few seconds later he was riding his black gelding, Full Knight, with the group of soldiers towards the ridge. They reached the top of the ridge and found the archer who put another arrow into Dalinar's shoulder. The archer began to flee, and Dalinar kicked him to the ground as he rode past. Dalinar dropped from his horse and grabbed the archer. "You waited until my helm was off," Dalinar demanded. "You are an assassin. You were set here specifically to kill me." The man winced, then nodded. "Amazing," Dalinar said, letting go of the fellow. "Show me that shot again. How far is that, Thaka? I'm right, aren't I? Over 300 yards? "Almost 4," Thaka said, pulling over his horse, but with a height advantage. "Still," Dalinar said, "grab your bow." "My bow?" the archer said. "Are you deaf, man?" Dalinar snapped. "Go get it." He picked up an arrow, then his bow. "Went right through my storming armor," Dalinar muttered. To his right, the armies clashed, and his main body of elites had come up to press at the flank. The rear guard had found some civilians and were shoving them into the street. "Pick a corpse," Dalinar said. "Stick an arrow in one down there, if you can." The archer licked his lips, still seeming confused. Finally, he took a spyglass off his belt and studied the area. "The one in blue, near the overturned cart." Dalinar squinted, then nodded. The archer drew his bow and launched a single black fletched arrow. It flew true, sticking into the chosen corpse. "Storm Father! Thaka, before today I'd have bet you half the princedom that shot was impossible." Dalinar turned to the archer. "What's your name, assassin?" The man raised his chin, but didn't reply. "Well, in any case, welcome to my elites," Dalinar said. "Someone get the fellow a horse." "What?" the archer said. "I tried to kill you." "Yes, from a distance, which shows remarkably good judgment. I can make use of someone with your skills." "We're enemies." Dalinar nodded toward the town below where the beleaguered army was surrendering. "Not anymore. Looks like we're all allies now." The archer spat to the side. "Slaves beneath your brother, the tyrant. If you'd rather be killed, I can respect that. Alternatively, you can join me and name your price." "The life of my Bright Lord Ysirye, the archer said, "the heir." "Is that the fellow," Dalinar said, looking to Thaka, "that you killed down below?" "Yes, sir." "He's got a hole in his chest," Dalinar said. "Tough break." You monster! Couldn't you have captured him?" "Nah, the other princedoms are digging in their heels, refuse to recognize my brother's crown. Games of catch me with the high light eyes just encourage people to fight back. If they knew we're out for blood, they'll think twice." Dalinar shrugged. "How about this? Join with me and we won't pillage the town. What's left of it anyway." The man looked down at the surrendering army. "You in or out? I promise not to make you shoot anyone you like." Great, Dalinar said, turning his horse and trotting off. When Dalinar and his elites returned to town, the archer rode with them. Sadeus already had the local high prince's head and those of his officers up on spears. "Dalinar," a voice called. Toril Sadeus pushed through a cluster of officers. The red-faced young man looked far older than he had a year ago. When they'd started all this, he'd still been a gangly youth. No longer. "Dalinar, are those arrows? Storm Father Man, you look like a thorn bush. What happened to your face? A fist, Dalinar said. Nice work. We lost the Crown Prince, Sadeus said. He'll mount a resistance. That would be impressive, Dalinar said, considering what I did to him. Sadeus relaxed visibly. Oh, Dalinar, what would we do without you? Lose. Someone get me something to drink and a pair of surgeons, in that order. Also, Sadeus, I promised we wouldn't pillage the city. No looting, no slaves taken. You what? Sadeus demanded. Who did you promise? Dalinar thumbed over his shoulder at the archer. Another one, Sadeus said. He's got amazing aim, Dalinar said. Loyal, too. He glanced to the side where Sadeus' soldiers had rounded up some weeping women for Sadeus to pick from. I was looking forward to tonight, Sadeus noted. And I was looking forward to breathing through my nose. We'll live. More than can be said for the kids we fought today. Fine, fine, Sadeus said, sighing. I suppose we can spare one town. A symbol that we are not without mercy. He looked over Dalinar again. We need to get you some shards, my friend. To protect me? Protect you? Storms, Dalinar, at this point, I'm not certain a rock slide could kill you. No, it just makes the rest of us look bad when you accomplish what you do while practically unarmed. Dalinar shrugged. He was done living for the day. It would be weeks, maybe months, before he got another opportunity. And that is the end of chapter 3, and that is where we will leave off for this week.
Hey, thanks tonight. For making me hate Sadeus more.
Yeah, even more.
I love hating him more.
Yeah. And Dalinar is, I think, a little horrific in this. At least he lacks the honor that he has later on.
Yeah. Like, whatever. He's very much like, whatever it takes to win.
Yeah, whenever we see him kill in, like, the Way of Kings, he's very much, like, regretting it as he's doing it. And in this one, he's like, yeah, where's the thrill? Where's that energy, right? Like, I wanna slaughter, you know? Like, and he's ruthless. Like, he's, like, round up their families to demoralize them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like... Well, and Sadeus was going to take those women.
Sadeus was worse. Yeah. Sadeus is still absolutely worse in this scenario.
Yep.
But this is the beginning of seeing...
But Dalinar's like, sorry, man, you don't get to do that tonight. Because Dalinar promised somebody.
Dalinar is at least... Dalinar is Cold he's War not as well doing to an it. Extent.
He's not doing it, but he's very much like... Yeah, well, whatever, man.
Yeah, he's not holding
I'm not gonna stop you.
His friends accountable.
Nope.
He's like, whatever. Yes. Yeah, we will continue to see why Dalinar is feared by everybody. But also I like the little detail in this of he gets shot with a black arrow, and Sadeus is like, you look like a thorn bush. And I'm pretty sure this is the reason. I'm pretty sure this is the reason he's called Blackthorn. Yeah, I don't think they ever like explicitly spell it out that like that's why he was called. Remember that time that he got shot with a black arrow? That's why he's called the Blackthorn. It's more, you know, you can put two and two together.
Yeah, that's a very anticlimactic way to get a really epic nickname.
Yeah, don't worry, he'll slaughter more people before we're done.
That's not what I meant.
I know, but yeah, it is a little anticlimactic, but I kind of like the idea that it's
it started out as nothing, but when the people hear it, they think more of him.
They think more of it, and he kind of uses it, and they use it kind of like to spread the myth of Dalinar. Like it's something that Sadeus brings up at the end here, where he's like, "Hey, you did this all without any shards, like no shard blade and no shard plate." Like, you make us all look bad because of that. You know, like, imagine what you could do with it.
Get good.
Yeah, get good. The tease for the end of this week is that we're going to see Kaladin, because we didn't see any of Kaladin this week, or this episode. We're going to see one of my favorite Kaladin sequences. You guys can join our Discord server. The link to join that is in the episode description. Follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Send us an email at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. And follow our good friend Alex, who did the awesome cover art, the awesome new cover art, at Alex_BigBoy. Who knows if Twitter's even still around by the time I upload this. She's probably how fast. But you know what? If it is, go there. And we will see you guys next week.
Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.